passe un super artiste, super encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot!
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De I semifinale igjen!
Hello from Trondheim. This is the Uninformed Handball Hour, and this is Brian Campion speaking to you.
Chris O'Reilly here as well, and we finally got the action underway yesterday, both here in Norway and over in Austria. Before we go any further, let's take a look at what happened on day one.
We start off in Trondheim with Germany having a good start against the Netherlands until Uwe Gensheimer got a red card.
So, Rabensperger meets up with Gensheimer again, and for the second time, Gensheimer misses, but painfully this time for Rabensperger, who takes the shot in the head. He was trying to put it down next to him. That could be an interesting one. Goalkeeper was moving. Ouch, that's going to hurt. Could be the end of the game. They have been off to look at the television. Let's see what the decision is going to be. They're talking to the EHF delegate. Could be a red card. It is.
Steins and Smits had Germany's defense and head coach's head spinning.
Und zweite Möglichkeit ist, dass man vielleicht wie heißt er? Klimo anpassen kann auf außen, okay?
For those of you who don't speak German, that was head coach Christian Prokop asking Timo Kastening what his name is, wie heißt du? But Germany stepped up and powered to a 34-23 win. This is what Julius Kühn had to say about the game.
The first half was not so good. We make really much technical faults. And we talk for that in the halftime and have to stay calm. And in the second half, we do much better and got some easy goals, some fast break goals. And at the end, it's a positive game for us.
The defense seemed that one of the worries was the difference in physicality. I mean, the Dutch backcourt were particularly smaller. That seemed to give your guys in the center a bit of troubles now and then, huh?
Yeah, these guys are really, really fast. Yeah. And that was a big problem for us because they shoot much goals when they go through the middle. That shouldn't happen because we want the goals from 9 meters with our good goalkeepers. And, yeah, we don't support them in the first half, and in the second half we do it much better.
Belarus and Serbia were engaged in a really tight battle over in Graz, and although Belarus had their noses in front throughout the first half with the likes of Karalek and Kulesh banging in the goals, Serbia never seemed too far behind. That was until the second half, when the Belarusians stepped through the gears and took a victory that a few, but not all of us, were expecting. 35-30.
The second game in Trondheim saw Latvia take an early advantage over the defending champion Spain, but they fought back through efforts from Sole and led late in the first half. A second red card for Spain in the second half gave Latvia some hope, but that just seemed to spur on the reigning champions even further, and they improved and ran out of victory 33-22. Here's Alex Dushabaev with his thoughts on the game.
Every time it's difficult to open a championship, to start the tournament, and of course we are a little bit nervous in the first few minutes. But after all these things, when we start to play, it was every minute was better. We feel much comfortable in defense, and also when we have the chance to run, to score goals in the fast break, it's easier for us.
You had those two red cards as well to Jorge and to Veron. I guess that was a bit of a setback. But the defense managed to settle quite well despite losing two such important players.
Yeah, it's always it's difficult if you play with two players less. But for sure, I think that's our defense. So we have to be strong. I don't think it was a proposed this red card for sure. But I don't see really. I cannot tell you if it was or not, or what I think. But because in the game I cannot tell you. I think it was very fast action and it's difficult. But I think after that we play better, inclusively, because we know that it was very important for us to play without two very important players in our defense, and I think we play a very good second half and last minutes of the match.
In the first Balkan derby of the championship, Montenegro gave their old pals Croatia quite a scare late in the first half, going on a 4-0 run to take the lead at the break. But in the second half, Luka Sindrić and co. caught fire in attack while the defence stood firm and Croatia claimed a 27-21 win.
So Montenegro trying to go through the middle, that doesn't work, and now there's a chance here for Croatia, one-on-one, no doubt about that one. As the seconds tick away, we've come to the end of the game. Croatia have done a job on Montenegro.
So there you have it. There's our recap of day one at the EHF Euro 2020. Chris, a lot of good action, but also some interesting things off the court or outside of the handball court as well.
I still can't get over Christian Prokop forgetting Timo Kastening's name. That video is just hilarious. but even more bizarre is that Prokop tried to play it off afterwards in the post-match interview, saying that he was like, it was kind of like a joke, or he was trying to get him to say his name. He just forgot it. He just forgot his name.
Because Timo was asked after the game, by Sky Sports, and he said he didn't see it as a joke at all. He totally forgot his name.
And well, they took it in their stride anyway. The players had a bit of a laugh at his expense, but Timo after the game, he seemed to take it well. Like, he was laughing and joking about it, so it doesn't seem to have bothered the young lad. I mean, for, was he 22, 23 years old in his first major championship, first game, your coach forgets your name after you've scored 3 goals in 10 minutes. I mean, that's pretty harsh.
Yeah.
We also had a sublime goal in the next game between Latvia and Spain, and that was just an absolute scorcher at the end of the first half.
Yeah, we were sitting there, and it was, I think it was about 3 or 4 seconds to go, and you had already resided to the fact that, oh, the half is over.
Yeah.
And then you had your head down the laptop, and I was like jumping out of my seat. I was like, oh my God, did you see that? And he was like, no, what happened? You just missed the goal of the day.
Goal of the day.
Goal of the tournament so far. Absolutely.
It's only one, goal of the day and goal of the tournament so far. Yeah, that was Uvis Strasdins from Latvia. Yeah, made a name for himself now. It was about 15 meters out.
Yeah,
absolutely gorgeous. So you haven't seen it yet, have a look on the EHF Euro social media channels. Also, we retweeted on the Handball Hour. You definitely will find it.
Yeah, from the substitute line. He's like, oh, the half is over. No, it's not. Agadoosh.
So today's focus is on the game tonight in Trondheim between France and Portugal, the highlight of the day, I would say. It's a packed day with 6 matches, but I think we're particularly looking forward to Portugal against France. And as we look ahead to it, we're going to speak to Kevin Domas, EHF journalist here in Trondheim. But first, we're going to take a closer look at the Portuguese side, who return to EHF Euro competition for the first time in 14 years. Portuguese handball has caught the imagination of fans and experts alike over the last few years. And they qualified for EHF Euro 2020, bringing an end to a 14-year drought. This is how Rui Silva saw the qualification campaign.
Yeah, at the beginning it was not so easy. We have a little bit against Romania. We have Quintana, he made an amazing game. After that, we know that in Lithuania it's hard because we know that big teams have a little bit difficult there, and we win with a lot of difficult. We can say that we have a little bit of lucky, but it's a part of the handball, it's that. And with France, we made an amazing game, and we bring 2 points for us that maybe we, in the beginning, it's not easy to believe that it's possible. So after that, we start to dream even more, and it was very good for us.
It was 39 years since their last victory over the French in 1980 in Tórshavn. But back then, the French weren't the 6-time world champion, 3-time Euro champion, or 2-time Olympic champions they are now. But not only that, they inflicted the worst defeat France have ever suffered in Euro qualification. So what was the secret? Rui Silva explains.
I don't know if it's a magic formula, but I think we start to believe. that we can make that and we can win and we can fight with that big teams, because we know that we have good players, we have talent players, we can go make good things, and I think it will start with believing, and after that with work and preparation for the game. And with all the players making a good game, it's more easier, and we made that. All the players were focused in the game with 100% to win that game, because France make maybe a little bit more motivation because of what they made in the past, and we know that they are a big team, and we believe, and we continue to believe that everything is possible.
It's been a long time waiting for Portugal, who've come so close on so many occasions. And now Rui Silva and his teammates will experience EHF Euro for the very first time.
We feel very proud what we made, and it's good that successful in these games and return to this kind of competition, because it's our ambition to return here, and we work a lot for that, and finally, after 14 years, we made that, and now we have to continue to work.
One of the few players playing abroad is Alexander Cavalcanti. He plays his handball with Nantes, and he looks back fondly at what his teammates have achieved on club level.
We are now very good because last 2-3 years we have always a team in the Champions League making a very amazing job. Sporting and Porto are doing an amazing job in EHF, the Champions League. And it's amazing to look to my country and see that the handball is improving, and now we just have to continue that to make Portugal the best.
Tiago Rocha experienced Champions League handball with Wisla Plotsk before coming back to Portugal, and has been shining ever since with Sporting Lisbon.
We feel this that the people are very excited, and we are making a good job in our teams and in Champions League, in AGF, and in the other competitions. And the Portuguese handball, we feel that is growing up, and we accept this excitement of the people, and we will try to respond with good answers to these people.
Rui Silva was just 13 the last time Portugal played in EHF Euro. A budding handball player back then, he tells us of his memories of that European Championship in Switzerland.
A little bit memories, I'm a little bit younger, but I already play handball in that time, and I already see on TV the handball Portuguese, and I saw that we were there, but with not so big memories. So now we want to put these memories to the young people that now start to see the handball and stay with these memories all the years with the big competitions.
The team in 2006 suffered 3 defeats and were knocked out in the very first round, a result that this current crop of players have absolutely no interest in. In fact, Tiago Rocha fancies a surprise or 2.
Our target is this, to surprise. We know that we are not the favorites in our group. The favorites are France and Norway, and we will try to surprise these teams and Bosnia, of course.
A confident Cavalcanti believes in this squad.
We have a good team, and we don't have like a big star, but in quality we are amazing. We can play amazing together because we play long years together, and that's it. We can do amazing things, and you'll see now in the European.
And Rui Silva is ready for anything.
We believe every time that we go to the court, we believe that we can win. If it's France, it's France. If it's Bosnia, it's Bosnia. If it's Norway, it's Norway. And we have to start to believe that we can make good things, and after our return to big competitions, now we want to continue to work, to stay here more time, because it's our focus, winning and work and fight with them, because it's about sport.
Thanks to the guys from the Portuguese national team there for their words on today's game against France and what it's like to be back at the EHF Euro. And now we move on to our in-studio guest for today, an expert on French handball. He works for Hand News and he's here at the Euro working for the EHF. Here we have Kevin Dumas, ladies and gentlemen. So Kevin, what do you make of the French selection?
To me, it's going to be a real struggle for them to go to the semi-finals, because for the last 2 years, we've been rebuilding. We've been, you know, incorporating new players, younger players, such as Dick Mem, Ludovic Fabregas, and so on. And now it's time to deliver for them. It's time to get results. It's time for them to show that the work that's been done during the two or three last years, you know, it's going to produce something, that they're not just battling for the bronze medal in competitions, but that they have the potential to go all the way to the titles. But I think there is a lot of interrogation surrounding it. They've got important players injured. There are some new players. I mean, they've got a brand new left-back position that we don't have any certainties about. And there are a lot of interrogations, but in the meantime, they have to deliver and they have to actually give answers. So it's quite a mixed feeling at the moment.
And that left-back you mentioned, Elohim Prandi, would you consider that to be the biggest news of the 16-man squad when it was announced?
I think there are two big news. I think his arrival is definitely one, and the fact that there's another new goalkeeper, Yann Gentil, to help Vincent Gérard between the posts is the other one. But Elohim Prandi is definitely probably the left-back that France have been waiting for 5-6 years maybe. I mean, he's proven. He's only played 4 games with the national team before the Euro, and he's been tremendous. He's really been excellent. He's got power, he's got finesse, he's got everything that a player needs on the court, and he actually is able to shoot from long range, which is something that France didn't have in the past last couple of years. He's a young player, but in my opinion, he's going to be one of the best newcomers of the whole competition. And Didier Deschamps was really keen on saying that he was the player that he had been waiting for a long time now. And I definitely think this left-back position is going to be key. If Prandi delivers, then France will not be far from the semifinals.
And you said about there about the goalkeepers. Is there any other selections you wouldn't have made?
The 16 players that are going to be starting against Portugal tonight are quite logical. I mean, there are no big surprises. There are no people that don't deserve to be here. I would have made the same choices, more or less. Maybe I would have taken a different right wing, because Port is used on the right wing, whereas it's a right back. But there are so many right backs in the squad that you can't actually get rid of any of them. I think it makes sense and it's quite logical to me.
You were talking about the young players on the team, and for the last couple of years, particularly in the two runs to bronze medals at the last Euro and the last World Championship, there was the feeling that it was still a very young team. And to be fair, in some senses it is. There's 7 players who are aged 24 or under, a bunch of players still 21, 22 years old. But you said there it's time to deliver. So it's no longer considered a team in development in your mind?
No, it's not. And for one reason, it's that most of the players that you are talking about, I think you are talking about Dick Mem, Fabregas, Nedim Remili, are now big profiles in their own clubs. Clubs that are playing top roles in the Champions League. And I mean, 2 years ago, they were learning the international context. They were just finding their fit, finding their rhythm. Whereas now, 2 years later, they have learned to play with each other, and they have learned a lot of things in their clubs as well. And it would be a huge disappointment if these guys, you know, played just like they played 2 years ago. I mean, 2 years ago, they were able to produce very good handball on one day and play quite average on the day after. And we just want some consistency. We just expect some consistency from them to play on a regular level. And it's not a team development anymore. Okay. And it's really it's a grown-up team, yeah. I think so. I mean, there are a couple of old players, but all these guys are really grown-ups, and we expect them to deliver now more than they did 2 years ago.
So you're saying you expected them to deliver, but we asked you to make some predictions, and you didn't pick France in your top three, so how dare you?
Well, it is a quite hard context for them, because they are playing against Norway in Norway in the preliminary round. And if they go to the main round, they play against Denmark and Sweden, which will be two of the other hosts, even though Denmark is not really a host. And that's, you can actually be able to play very, very good handball, but there are so many things, you know, outside the court, like the pressure, like the environment, that you're not able to control. And experience when it comes to Euros and when it comes to big competitions in general is really important.
Yeah.
And I think, like, if you look at Denmark, these guys have been playing together for 5-6 years, and Norway, they've started this campaign in 2016, and now it's 4 years down the road.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think that makes the difference. And to me, they will finish fifth or sixth. Not that I don't believe in them, but the fact that they are playing against strong teams, playing at home, with so many expectations for those teams, not for France, it's just going to make the difference.
Or in that case, what do you think the best case scenario is for this French team, considering what they what they're able to deliver, and also considering that home advantage in these competitions are not always the best thing?
Best case scenario is that they would be able to beat Norway, because I think Norway are the less dominant of those three hosts. I mean, the three Scandinavian countries, teams. And maybe they will be able to beat Norway, progress to the main round with 2 points, and then it's all open. I mean, it's all open for there. If they lose to Norway, then it's going to be really hard. I mean, let's face it. There are so many great teams that it's going to be hard.
Well, if you get past Portugal first, which is tonight, obviously, what do you remember from that, from those two qualifying games against Portugal?
The first one was a disaster. or a real success for Portugal. I mean, the second one, France were able to learn from their mistakes in 3 days and play much better. But Portugal are really a team that can surprise anyone. And that's really what you have got to keep in mind. I mean, these guys have grown up and progressed so much over the last 3 or 4 years. I think it was a real surprise for France to lose in Portugal. Yeah. I mean, when you ask me what I remember from that, I remember not watching the game. I was like, France are going to win by 10. And then turning on the TV 10 minutes before the end, I was like, they're losing by 5 or something. Yeah. That was a real surprise. And I think nobody saw it coming, especially in the team. I wouldn't say they were overconfident, but nobody saw it coming. And it was a real turning point, I think, because there was a lot of tension after the game. There was, you know, quite an argument between some of the players and the coach about things to be changed and how to deal with the opponents and how to, you know, make the team play, really. That was a big argument. And some players got left out of the team for the second round.
What was the reaction in France like to that in the media?
I think there was a lot of backlash against Didier Dinard because it has been, you know, a bit silent for the next for the last 2 years before that. But there were a lot of choices that were strange up to that. And as I told you, there were many changes afterwards because players, I wouldn't say complained, but made their voices heard. They said some things to him about, you know, how they should be used on the court, how they should play, how the team should play. And there were a lot of changes. That was a real turning point. I mean, the history of this young group, this defeat in Portugal was key.
Do you think it's a turning point for the good, though? Do you think that this loss coming at that point was a good kind of kick in the ass for them? You know, better to happen in qualification where you're almost certainly going to go through, and then for them actually coming up against Portugal again, a team that they kind of got their wake-up call against, is an ideal scenario for them.
I think it was. I think it was because would this defeat have happened at the Euro, for example, that would have been an even bigger disaster. I mean, in the face of all Europe, lose to Portugal, which is meant to be a lesser, you know, lesser team, even though they are really good. That would have been a huge slap in the face. Whereas now it went quite unnoticed on a general scale.
Yeah.
So in France, you had the opportunity to talk about it, to change things.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it didn't have any consequences. Yeah. That was like a slap, but without any consequences. Whereas now, if you lose to Portugal tonight, and that would have been the first time,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're almost out of the race for the semifinals already.
Yeah.
And that was better for the team that it happened 10 months ago.
Now, Kevin, you were saying there that some of the senior players were speaking up after that loss to Portugal, and you said they wanted changes to be made. What changes actually were made?
I think that prior to this defeat, Didier Dinard was really emphasizing, really insistent about this new generation and about this new generation having a bigger place with every game. And I think the older players felt kind of left out, you know, that like they were already on their way out and they didn't like it. And maybe it felt on the court sometimes. I mean, during the past season, Sorrento didn't play a lot. Abalo was really left out as well. And it changed, it turned around. If you look at the preparation game prior to this Euro, Abalo has got a very big role. Sorrento has got a very big role as well. And that changed. I mean, maybe Dinar wanted to go too fast in the future. Like, it was already too much thinking about the future and not making enough of the link between the past and the future. And this has changed, I think. And this is why we're playing better now.
Now, looking ahead to the game tonight against Portugal, you know, it's going to be a dangerous game for France, no matter what, even if they've learned their lessons. Talking about the matchup and the clash of styles between the two teams, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to Portugal being 7-6 for 60 minutes.
are you really looking forward to that?
it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting. It's new and it's brand new form of handball. I'm really looking forward to see if France are going to be able to cope with this kind of attack, with this offense, because if they manage to find the key to this 7-6, then they will probably win. But if they don't manage to defend well, to pick up goals and to provoke turnovers, then they're going to be in big trouble.
It's kind of like a game of extremes there, right? Because when you're playing 7-6 for the entire 60 minutes like that, either you're going to get easy goals the entire time or the opposition are going to get easy goals the entire time. I mean, we saw it with the famous World Championship game between Brazil and Croatia last year, where there was at least, 10 empty net goals. Do you think that this French defense is well equipped to deal with it? I mean, they have strong defensive players in there, but have they got the movement in particular, and is a mixture of patience and movement needed in a defense when you're playing against seven players to actually stop them?
I think a team playing 7-6 is actually the worst dream for France, because Portuguese players are used to play that all season long. I mean, Porto and Sporting are using it a lot, I mean, in their domestic leagues and in the Champions League, whereas nobody in France plays that ever. So it's just like you've got one game to adapt to a brand new form of handball. And if you look at the France players, they're all tall, they're all quite huge, and they have problems to move from side to side, whereas to defend a 7-6 offense, you have to move very quickly and to be able, you know, to anticipate and to stop passes. And this is really a nightmare. I mean, I was talking to one of the players who was like, they hate to defend against a 7-6 because they don't know how to do it. I mean, Portuguese players know exactly what they have to do in this context, whereas French defenders don't know. Well, they know what to do, but they're not used to it, they're not trained to, and it's quite difficult for them.
And so who do you see as the Portuguese biggest danger man then?
I would say Rui Silva. I mean, I would have said Duarte before, but Rui Silva is really skillful, is quick, is able to put his head where some of the others wouldn't even put a fit. He's really a mastermind. I mean, and I've seen him many times playing with his club, and it's just bewildering every time. He's really an excellent player. And he would be one of the main dangers for Portugal this afternoon.
So you were looking ahead to the Norway game even earlier in the interview.
Yeah.
So does that mean that you still consider this a game that France should and will win against Portugal?
I think so. I mean, it's just like, I think it's going to be tighter than anyone expects. Oh. I think it's going to be 3-2 goals difference maybe. But I think France should win thanks to this experience that I talked about earlier on. They have, you know, been together for, they know how to handle it. I mean, give the ball to Nikola Karabatic in the dying 5 minutes of the game and he knows what is got to do. But it's going to be hard. But I see France winning anyway.
Sascha Stad said in his prediction that France wouldn't do it because they don't have a world-class keeper. And he said Gerrard is a good keeper, but not a world-class keeper. Do you think he's a world-class keeper?
He can be a world-class keeper at some points, sometimes, but not always. I mean, it's all or never with him. Mm-hmm. Whereas either he's really good, I mean, really, really good, or he's terrible. And there is no middle ground with him. And that's the danger. And it's even more dangerous since we have absolutely no certainties about the second goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's played like six games with the national team so far, so we don't know how he's going to behave in this kind of, you know, environment, in this kind of competition. So the goalkeeper position is going to be key for France, not only against Portugal, but also throughout the competition, because we have no certainties. I mean, when you had Thierry Meyer, you know he was going to save 10 balls a game. Gerard can save only one, and the second one can only save one. And with,
would you have stuck with Gentil as a second goalkeeper, or would you have given Wesley Pardon the opportunity?
I really like Yann Gentil's style of goalkeeping, because it's so different, and he actually can surprise his opponents. I mean, it's really, really different. I don't know if you've seen him go.
Interestingly, because he's great at just catching the ball, not parrying it away. Against a 7-on-6 attack, if he makes a few saves like that, an automatic catch, then there will be some goals there to be had, which is...
You know, he's actually the best scoring goalkeeper in the French league, just because he catches the ball and throws it. He's the best... he's got the most assists as a goalkeeper as well. And it's really important. And that's what his style brings to the French team. I mean, he's so good at fast breaks and so good at scoring goals. And I think that was one of the points on which Didier Deschamps made his choice, is that he could actually bring two or three goals in empty nets, and that might make the difference in the end.
Yann Gendy, top scorer tonight against Portugal.
So what's the score going to be? Come on.
It's going to be 31-28 for France.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
Good high scoring game. All right, Kevin the Man, thank you very much.
Thanks for inviting me. Cheers.
Thank you, Kevin De Ma. A nice preview there overall. We've heard from the French side, we've heard from the Portuguese side, and really looking forward to that game. Just one of six matches you can see on EHFTV.com or wherever your local broadcaster is. Next time you'll hear from us is on Sunday, and by then there'll be 12 more matches to look back at. I hope you enjoy the games, and you'll hear from us very, very soon. So it's goodbye from us, and Brian, as they say in Austria,
Wiederschauen. Tschüss. Papa.